Welcome to today's segment of our Briefly Focused series. Today's portion is called Understanding Motivations and Dopamine Management. I'm Alla Policastro, CLE Advisor for the Beverly Hills Bar Association, and I'm delighted to present today's speaker, Lindsay Paoli. Lindsay is the founder and mind performance coach at Fundamental Health, a company dedicated to delivering personalized, evidence-based training solutions for business leaders and entrepreneurs. With a master's degree in marriage and family therapy and counseling and years of experience as a consultant and coach, Lindsay brings a deep expertise in the intersection of mental health, neuroscience, and performance. Lindsay's mission is to redefine how we approach mental health, moving it from a reactive concept to a proactive lifestyle strategy. She believes that lasting success is built on the foundation of self-care, meaningful relationships, and optimized mental performance. We can't wait to hear what she has to share with us today. Lindsay, over to you.
Thank you so much, Alla. Welcome, everybody. I know that you guys have had an amazing segment with this Briefly Focused. And I'm so happy to be doing my second presentation. I know that some of you are returning from last week's presentation. So I'm happy to see some return today and excited to talk all about dopamine and ADHD and how it applies specifically to you in the legal industry. Let me have you. Oh, I do have access to the slides. So today we're going to be covering helping you to normalize some of the challenges that you might see in your high demand legal settings, why motivation may feel inconsistent, specifically as it applies to ADHD, but also just in general when we understand the neuroscience of the brain, what dopamine means, what it is actually, and what it has to do with your motivation and feelings of inconsistency, and some tools, which is my favorite part. I always like to leave you with as many tools as possible so that you feel more in control and in command of your own mental performance. So it has a question on here, and I want to let you guys know, I believe that we learn best by interacting together. And so I'm going to do a lot of Q&As here, and I'm relying on you to be as interactive as possible. So bear with me. I'm going to have them go ahead and first put up one poll if possible. I want to see how many of you have been formally diagnosed, and this is completely anonymous. How many of you suspect you have ADHD? I like to call it ADHD curious. How many of you are here to learn out of curiosity? I've actually had calls over the last week since my last training where some were saying they were coming to learn about ADHD because they thought some other people in their firm might have ADHD and they wanted to help them to be better motivated and focused. So go ahead and leave your responses in the poll that we've put up so I can kind of get a gauge of where we are as a group. And then I'm not sure how long this will take to get responses. So we'll let it run for, oh, there we go. Perfect. So 27% have been formally diagnosed with ADHD. Oh, I should have asked how many are men and women, but that's okay. 48, about half of us suspect we have ADHD but haven't been diagnosed. And about a quarter of us are just here out of personal curiosity. Amazing. Well, I'm glad to have all of you. And I want this training to be effective for all of you, regardless of the diagnosis or not, and give you some information as to why ADHD can be so confusing to kind of pin down. So even just understanding the basic neuroscience of your brain will help you to do that, like I said, whether you have ADHD or not. I'm trying to, can we, there we go. So my name is Lindsay Paoli, very nice Italian name. I'm married in Italian and I'm a dual licensed therapist. So I'm licensed in both marriage and family therapy and as a clinical professional counselor. And so my master's degree was in marriage and family therapy, which is a more systems-based approach to mental health. So essentially, we don't see mental health as a diagnosis. We see it as the result of the many systems that we are a product of. So whether it is the family that we were raised in, or our social groups that we surround ourselves with, our coworkers, our religion, our socioeconomic dynamics. All of these things are at play, contributing to how we operate and what's considered appropriate in how we're supposed to operate, quote unquote, and how we're not. And so I think especially as it comes to ADHD, that really comes into focus as to what is appropriate versus not appropriate, instead of just boiling it down to a diagnosis and seeing it as a disorder. And we're going to talk a little bit more about ADHD as a neurotype and what that means to the many systems that you're a part of. Before becoming a therapist, I was actually in the corporate world. I'm based here in Las Vegas and worked on the Strip in hospitality for about a decade. But before that, I was raised by a military family. So my dad was an efficiency expert for the Air Force, meaning there was always a right way to do things and a wrong way to do things. And he was in for 30 years. And there's definitely a culture within the military that contributed to the way that I was raised and the way that I perceived the world as well. And it's also helped me a ton now in my corporate training, which is why I always like to take note of it. So by the time I was about 30, I had about 10 years in hospitality working on the Strip. I worked at places like the Mirage. I helped open Vidara working with MGM Resorts. I went then to Wynn and Encore and then to Cosmopolitan. And so my focus was in guest experience, which is that essentially was making sure that all of our guests were happy, all of our departments were communicating effectively to prevent as many negative circumstances as possible. And it was a very difficult job, quite frankly, for a very young girl. Like my first promotion was at 23 years old, and I didn't have a ton of stress management skill coming from a very military background where it's very much like pull yourself up by your bootstraps. We don't talk about emotions. Therapy is for the weak. And so having to manage all of the emotions of upset guests on a day-to-day basis, in addition to my own personal life stressors and those of my team members, I was just completely, I felt completely over my head by the time I was 30. What I also recognized later is hospitality was just never something I was very interested in, which as somebody who was diagnosed ADHD made it so much harder. It felt like I was climbing uphill every single day. So by the time I was 30, I ended up going to a therapist. I was suffering from anxiety and depression and just basic classic burnout. And working with this therapist who happened to also be an executive coach, I realized that what I had thought of therapy in the past and what she was teaching me were two different things, where I really wanted to be somebody who used mental health as an optimizer. And that's something that she helped me to do. So I left hospitality altogether and dropped everything to go to grad school and become a therapist. And now I work specifically with corporate leaders and business owners, just like you. I work with United Airlines and do leadership training. Work with a lot of different entrepreneurial workers, essentially, because high achievers operate very differently than most people going to therapy. So I was diagnosed with ADHD at 30, but I didn't believe it. And this is about when I was in grad school. I didn't necessarily believe that ADHD was even real. I thought it was like a scam by the medical system to put more little boys on medication earlier and getting them addicted. And I had a brother who was diagnosed with ADHD when he was 5, and I was nothing like my brother. So it made no sense to me for them to decide that I was ADHD. Let me go ahead and ask in the group, how many, just say if you're male or female, if you're comfortable, or neither, if you don't identify, if we have any non-binary. But this is interesting to address that women are being diagnosed so much more now than they were 10, 20 years ago, because it was primarily a diagnosis just for young, hyperactive little boys. And now we're seeing that the average diagnosis for women is between the ages of 30 and 40. And it's because it presents differently in women in that hyperactivity is in the disorganization of their thinking, their a struggle to prioritize thoughts or organize their workspaces, et cetera. All right. So if you're comfortable sharing your gender, you can do so in the chat. I worked with a therapist who also does executive coaching here in Las Vegas. All right, moving on. There we go. We'll see if anybody else answers. Okay. Oh, that's right, too. This is not an anonymous poll. All right. Well, thank you guys for still responding. Oh, interesting. There we go. Okay. It sounds like, oh, chat was disabled. People are getting it through now. Perfect. Okay. So far, we're about 50-50 in here. I was curious as to how many would be female because so many are not diagnosed and curious. Thank you, guys. All right. So let's understand a little bit about ADHD. So the ADHD brain is wired not wrong. Like I said, I don't like to think of it as a disorder. I like to think of it as a different neurotype. So it's wired differently than the neurotypical brain. So there are a lot of different theories about the disorder of ADHD. And I operate from the belief that ADHD stems from a, it has evolved from our hunter-gatherer brain. So before there was our farming brain and people got really good at doing monotonous tasks for a very long time in industrialized America, we had the hunter-gatherer brain that was really crucial to help us stay alert on and to increase our senses and awareness of our surroundings. We had to be constantly in movement without getting tired. Maybe our sleep patterns were a little bit disrupted because maybe we were hunting at night or keeping the tribe safe at night. And so a lot of the things that we now see as negative symptoms of ADHD evolved from this type of brain, which was crucial and necessary to our tribes in early human times. And so I like to see it as really, it's a great superpower. We're just living in a society that doesn't operate the same way that it used to. So I've spoken with a lot of people that are like, I went to law school and I would look at people and be like, how can they study so tediously and monotonously and thoroughly for hours at a time? My brain just does not operate that way. And so I like to let you know that it's not because your brain is wrong. It's that your brain is wired for so many other great skill sets. We actually think faster than the neurotypical brain. We think out of the box. There's a lot of really great assets that we have. But society and the system that we're in tells us that we are different and we're not operating the way that everybody should, and we're not conforming appropriately. So it has been labeled as a disorder in the long run. But there are a lot of psychology professionals who also agree with this theory. So my last training was all about executive dysfunction. If you'd be interested in it, I think that you can still go check it out. And so executive dysfunction is all of the executive functions that basically run your brain. I call it like the C-suite of your brain. ADHD brains have higher rates of executive dysfunction. So it's not that we're lazy. It's not that we're not motivated like people maybe have told you in your past. It's that we operate completely with like a different blueprint than other people. And you simply have to figure out your blueprint. ADHD is a interest-based nervous system. So you may notice that it feels like you're only not motivated for things that are really boring and things that are really boring to you. So for lawyers, a lot of people said in last week training, you know, the biggest hurdle for me is doing billing because it's a tedious, boring task that doesn't ignite me. But on the other hand, we have the ability of hyperfocus, which a neurotypical brain doesn't have, which also plays a huge role in you being a great lawyer. It can send you into amazing bouts of really great research. It gets you really motivated to dive into to figuring out a different way of seeing a certain case, et cetera. So learning to lean into your interests And to delegate or figure out new tools for the things that are less interesting to you is absolutely crucial for the ADHD brain. So some common traits in ADHD lawyers that you may have been told that you have or suspect that you have are procrastination, perfectionism, hyperfocus, and time blindness. Thank you. Oops, we both went. Okay. So dopamine is our neurotransmitter and a hormone in our brain that is literally created as both the motivation molecule and the anticipation molecule. So most people have heard of dopamine as being the achievement molecule, letting us know when we've done something good, but it's also kind of like our waiting mode and the ability to work towards that achievement in the long run. And ADHD brains actually have a lower baseline level of dopamine than the standard neurotypical brain. So we're operating with less dopamine than the standard brain just on a day-to-day basis. And so that lack of motivation can often be coming from that in awareness or unawareness of us having lower levels of dopamine. So that anticipation, our ability to build up towards working towards something that's far away in the future, it's literally our neurochemically, we're wired very differently. And we're going to talk about some ways that you can increase your baseline and just better understand dopamine in general. So things like impulsivity, boredom, craving stimulation, all are because we have lower levels of dopamine. So dopamine is released when you've done something good, when something feels exciting, or as a reward system. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about dopamine dumping here in a minute and some things that can completely deplete your dopamine because you're getting too many of the quick hits of the reward without the necessary buildup to build that anticipation portion of your dopamine baseline as well. So dopamine is essentially like the fuel in your car, and our brains are running with less fuel than everybody else on a day-to-day basis. Go ahead and let me know in the chat if you already knew this about your brain or if you've already heard about this dopamine theory with ADHD. Just say yes, and I want to see how many of you are. And I'm just going to keep going. Okay, cool. So some of you have heard, some of you have not. Perfect. So dopamine helps us to feel like we're on a constant roller coaster of motivation. And lawyers specifically can really fall into this trap and feel as though they're on a roller coaster day to day because we already are, I'm not a lawyer, because you already rely on urgency-induced dopamine. So typically, if you're working in a firm, you likely have very strict deadlines. You may feel like you're in crisis mode all the time. You may have demanding bosses that are making sure that they're holding you accountable. And there's a negative repercussion if you're not doing things on the right timeline, et cetera. And it gets really tricky when people are not working in these firms or working in the high demands of law school anymore. If you open your own practice and there's nobody breathing down your neck to accomplish things, suddenly your ADHD can feel like it's really flaring up because those deadlines, those crises, are actually a great way to stimulate and motivate your ADHD to be less problematic. But the thing is, even if you are operating with this really high fight or flight system is essentially what you're relying on. We, as ADHDers, we're already in a more dysregulated nervous system where we're in a heightened state of fight or flight more consistently. Over time, no matter what, if you're in fight or flight consistently, whether you have ADHD or not, you're on the verge of burnout. Your brain and body and nervous system can only withstand so much fight or flight before it starts giving out. And so that's kind of something that I was experiencing without even recognizing it because I didn't know I had ADHD, is we're more likely to experience burnout because we end up building these coping tools around ourselves, like relying on this high intensity form of lifestyle to make sure that we are staying, keeping our brains in line. So over time, it's going to lead to burnout. It'll feel like you're being very inconsistent. You'll feel those waves of motivation. And eventually it almost feels like numbness, where you can't find ways to motivate yourself at all. But burnout is like a whole different training that we'll have to talk about. And then you're experiencing chronic stress, which your body will let you know you're having symptoms of through physical symptoms, through pain, lower back pain, headaches, migraines, disrupted sleep, hyperhidrosis, which is excessive sweating, irritable bowel syndrome, all kinds of things that are the result of you being in too high of a fight or flight mode for too long. So your inconsistent effort is not a lack of discipline. It's the neurochemical gap where your body and your lifestyle, the industry that you chose, have helped you to try and cope in a way that's not impactful in a sustainable way. So let me know, is this something that you usually rely on to get things done? What are some tools or tips that you rely on to make sure that you're accomplishing what you need to do, whether it's coffee or exercise or having really strict accountability buddies? Let me know in the chat what you guys are using. Or are you like, I'm not doing anything, and this is why this training is necessary? Crisis and coffee. Yes, exactly. I just did a TED talk on understanding just mental health and why we need to be more empowered to take care of it ourselves instead of going to therapy. And I described that I lived in crisis and coffee. I just relied on coffee and stamina, right? Exercise, a stable sleep schedule. Good job. Deadlines. Deadlines will always keep you motivated, right? Deadlines are a huge motivator. Music helps me tune out other distractions. You're stealing my tools. Look at you guys. I love that the ADHD community also has all of these ways that they've already hacked their neurochemistry that oftentimes they don't realize that they have. That's such a good one. I realize that I'm on this dopamine train when I check the stock market more often than I should, when it doesn't really matter and I need to stop cold turkey. That is really great self-awareness, which is something that ADHDers don't always have. Great job. Reminders: a week out, 2 days, 1 day, and 0 day gives me peace, and exercise makes me feel better. Yeah, so you've built in your own deadline system. I love that. Crisis, accountability, and urgency. Oh, good job. Well, good. I'm glad that I'm helping you. Erin says you didn't realize it until this presentation. Deadline self-reward. Yes, I love that. Making sure that you're giving yourself positive reinforcement. Lots of hyper-focus, music, snacks. Yep. Sometimes I talk with my coworkers or boss through tasks, likely to help you organize your thoughts and prioritize what needs to be done. I love that. Music is so important to me in regulating my EFD that I pivoted my entire practice field to the music industry. I love that. And Outlook calendar. Oh my God. I live by my calendar. I tell people, and it's not something that I realized until I was in my late 30s. If it's not on my calendar, literally out of sight, out of mind, right? Putting out fires one at a time. All right. So yes, I love that. And I like to see that I was a little bit accurate, that we're kind of relying on being in fight or flight to be successful. And that can only sustain for so long. So we want to give you some other tools to help you lean more into the rest and digest and let your days feel exciting and fun and not terrifying. Yes, thank you. Okay, so low dopamine can result from mental disorders. Not only ADHD, but also autism, schizophrenia, Parkinson's disease are all related to low dopamine. Adrenal gland issues. So if you're running on your adrenals or on high cortisol, your body will start producing lower dopamine. So even if you don't have ADHD, then you can lower your dopamine by being in a stressful state. And then when you have ADHD and you have a lower baseline of dopamine, and then you put yourself in this stress state, you're putting yourself at an even lower dopamine state. So that's why it's so crucial that we address this. Some things that we typically do that have been so normalized by society that further disrupt our dopamine when we're already so low on it is things like dopamine dumping, which could include having excess sugar, which having sugar at all is automatically going to release that dopamine for you. So we tend to find ways that give us quick hits of dopamine because we feel that we're not motivated. And so we'll go and grab some candy. Like I've been guilty of like a 2 o'clock snack of Skittles just to get me through the day, or coffee at 2 o'clock. And it's genuinely one of the worst things that you can do because it's only further downregulating your dopamine. Doom scrolling. Who uses their phone to try and just, you just like to vegetate for a little bit, right? You don't know what it is. Like, let me just look at my phone for 20 minutes and then I know I'll be motivated after. No, that's your brain letting you know that you already are receiving low dopamine. And when you're scrolling, every new screen is giving you a tiny, tiny incremental hit of dopamine. And so it's actually giving you a little hit, but it's depleting your dopamine reserves in the long run. Drugs and alcohol are also going to deplete your dopamine faster, and things like watching pornography. Next slide, please. All right, so we want to be able to work with our dopamine, not against it. So if you can replenish your dopamine daily, you want to be doing that through daily just self-care habits. So I teach what I call the mind fundamentals, and they're 7 daily habits that improve your just your neuroplasticity and your dopamine and all of your neurotransmitters to be where they're supposed to be. And they're incredibly simple. I forgot to tell you guys at the beginning to grab a pen and paper. I like to have worksheets when I can, but I couldn't get a worksheet together for this training. So I want you to write down these tools that are going to help you to replenish your dopamine. And you're going to want to incorporate them daily in very small increments. Okay. So the first one is movement, which is something that you guys said that you're already practicing. So movement is any form of exercise. You're going to notice with an ADHD brain that if you exercise first thing in the morning, you're going to feel more on task, more focused, more organized, and more able to initiate tasks that you don't want to do when you complete the exercise first thing in the morning, because that's releasing healthy dopamine to uplevel your dopamine levels. Somebody asked what the test is for dopamine level, and genuinely, I don't know. That's a good question. The next one is intention. So being very intentional about your goals for the day. So having a to-do list, I like to brain dump very first thing in the morning. Literally anything that's on my mind, I get down on paper and then I organize and prioritize it from there, because otherwise what ends up happening is exactly what you guys said, is I'm just going from fire to fire and putting out fires. And then by the end of the day, I don't feel like I accomplished anything. I haven't done anything I actually needed to do, and I'm not moving the needle in any of the big long-term tasks that I'm looking for. So intention is your second one. The third one is nourishment. So if you prepare your meals in advance, you want to make sure that you're prioritizing protein specifically for ADHD, because your brain requires more protein for methylation. This is all very neuroscience stuff that we're not going to dive into a ton today, but make sure that you're getting between 20 to 30 grams of protein per meal. Don't skip meals and try not to rely on those sugar busts. Deep connections. We get so many releases of neurotransmitters when we rely on other people, when we vent to other people, when we ask other people for help. Somebody mentioned that they ask their boss and their coworkers to help them stay on task for jobs. That's a great one. Fresh air, super simple. Get outside and it re-regulates your body. Whether it's sunny or cloudy, just being outside just retrains the body. Unplugging, So that refers to your sleep hygiene. So making sure that you're sleeping approximately at the same time each night will help you to maintain great levels of dopamine. And finally, learning every single day. So challenging yourself to do something that you don't want to do is going to kind of work that learning muscle. And then, so these are things that you're going to want to do to build consistency doing these things that are going to help you to maintain your dopamine levels. Somebody said, like TikTok 100% is doom scrolling, and it'll TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, any of those are going to give you that quick release of dopamine. Even watching YouTube. So if you have kids with ADHD, YouTube could be dopamine dumping for them. All right, so boosting dopamine outside of work. Oh, well, we do have an entire slide on this. So movement, you want to make sure that you're trying to move every 90 minutes. So don't get stuck in a cycle of sitting all day long. It's one of the worst things you could do for your dopamine levels. And that'll also apply to your unplugging, which is regulating your sleep and taking breaks. So if you have a routine of getting up to walk every 90 minutes or so, then you're hitting both the movement and the unplugging because you're taking a break. It'll help your dopamine to kind of replenish and then come back to the work and hopefully lean into. Every ADHDer knows what it feels like to hyper focus, right? Where like some days you can't accomplish anything, and then some days you can start doing something that you love and you could literally do it unstoppably for the next 8 hours. You don't even get up to pee, right? And you're so excited about it and it just flows out of you. It's like the best feeling ever, and it's something that the neurotypical brain doesn't have. You want to disrupt that when you can, because it'll deplete you of accomplishing anything else. So when you're working, you would want to disrupt that when you can and ensure that you're taking those breaks. And you can still get back into hyper focus faster when you take those breaks. Nutrition, like I said, protein in the morning, avoid sugar, avoid caffeine, avoid relying solely on caffeine, especially in the afternoon. Sleep and light hygiene, improve your sleep. So look at the sun first thing in the morning. And then also, like I mentioned, go to bed at the same time every single day. Try to wake up at the same time every day. Play and novelty breaks. So we're going to talk about how much the ADHD brain requires novelty. And so we'll give you some tools to help you identify some ways to incorporate novelty to again initiate that hyper focus. Social connection. So those deep connections that we talked about are going to boost your brain and mood. Next slide, please. All right, so this is my favorite tool to recommend for ADHDers. It's called NCUP, and it is an acronym. So again, if you didn't grab a pen and paper before, I encourage you to definitely grab the pen and paper now, because we're going to go through each of these five different tools and how they motivate the brain differently, the ADHD brain specifically. So the first one is interest. So making the task meaningful or engaging is a guaranteed way to help you to motivate your brain to do something. So if you're combining doing a boring task with something that you do enjoy, then you're more likely to accomplish the task. And your question to yourself is, how can I make this matter to me? Excuse me. In the legal profession, chances are, and the last one is passion. We'll talk about this. You can make this interesting because you got into law because you found the judicial system interesting. You found justice interesting. So just reminding yourself of why the task that you're doing is in alignment with your interest and your passion is going to help you to stay on task. So let me know in the chat, what are the things that are genuinely interesting and energize you in the specific work that you do? Okay. I don't know how to respond to that one. So fear is your interest. I don't know how to hack that one. I think I'm gonna need more information there. Brainstorming legal theories with colleagues, absolutely. So if you're doing something that is a struggle, maybe brainstorming other ways to do it with colleagues could be an interesting way to do it. Researching new cases. I try to take in a variety of cases and clients to reduce monotony. Perfect. Yes, hopefully you guys see all of the ways that you're also doing right by improving your motivation. And then you're able to lean more into those strengths. So other ways that you can do it are, you guys had mentioned music. So if you maybe listen to music while you're doing something, that's the only thing that I can think of, and you guys could probably let me know some other things that you struggle with. The thing that comes to me first is billing. I know nobody likes billing. As therapists, we don't like billing either, and we don't like notes. And so I don't know if it's the same in the legal industry. But so if you're doing something that feels particularly boring, you would want to pair it with something else. Also, the ADHD brain is very unique in that we operate better with like some background noise. So listening to a podcast and accomplishing billing at the same time is not unheard of. And we actually do better when we're doing multiple things, when we're pairing something that's more interesting with something that's boring. Even if you're moving, I have a walking pad over here. You can reward yourself with like walking while you're doing something that feels monotonous. I read recently about a guy who trained for marathons. I mean, by only wearing a nicotine patch while he was training for the marathon, so he would get that boost, only while training for his marathon. See the works product of coworkers in challenging me to make mine better. Ooh, yes. So competition, we're getting there. Good though. I like to incorporate humor or put a comedy or action movie on in the background. Perfect. Yes. Another thing about music, and this is completely unrelated, but I'm ADHD, so bear with me. Music is a really great thing for ADHDers too, because it can operate as kind of white noise. So I mentioned that because we evolved from the hunter-gatherer form of the human being, we're more aware of sounds and even like lights around us. So music can kind of operate as kind of like white noise in the background, especially predictable music. So classical music is really good, or just any songs that you just know. If it's like sporadic or unpredictable or something that's gonna excite you or feel novel, then it's gonna take your attention away. But predictable music is a great way to stay on task. All right, next slide, please. So the next one in our acronym is novelty. So new settings, new tools, a new approach. Anything you can do to switch up your routine or visual environment. So one way that I personally do this is I like to do one day a week of co-working or just working out in the wild. And I don't know if this is available to everybody, but even if it's something that you can like reorganize your office or something so that it feels like it's different, or go and sit next to somebody else for the day, being in a new novel environment will, even though it has nothing to do with the work that you're doing, but it will keep you better on task. So I'll go down to the strip and I like going to the Wynn, and there's a great bar that overlooks a little waterfall, and I'll go and sit there and open up shop and do all of my notes that I've been avoiding for the week, or catch up on emails or things that I don't typically like doing throughout the week. And I'll do it in that new environment, and you stay better on task. So because I'm not a lawyer, let me know two ways that you can add novelty into a task that you do. Let me know a way that you could specifically, if you're working in a firm, I don't know if you guys have like work from home options, or if you can go find a new outlet, or if you can even just do things in a different order, then that'll feel novel to you. So I'll let you think and let me know something that would apply specifically to you. And in the meantime, we can go ahead and forward that slide. Thank you. I go to the law library. That sounds fun. I want to go to the law library. Answer client emails from the beach. Oh, yes. You guys are in California. You got the beach 100%. The most novel place ever is just being outdoors, right? Something new is happening all the time. Getting to work 2 hours early and leaving 2 hours early. I like that. I many times work until 10 p.m. Oh my gosh. I'm a solo practitioner and work from home, and I enjoy going to a place near the ocean with my laptop for a day. It's recharging. Okay. So again, I want you guys to see the things that you're already doing are working for you, and they're not only working for you, they're absolutely necessary and crucial for you to stay motivated. So if you just feel like you're like a weird lawyer who goes to the beach and all of your coworkers are like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I just accomplish things at the desk. Who cares what they're doing? You're tapping into what your ADHD brain needs. All right, the next one is challenge. And somebody had mentioned competition earlier. So that's exactly what a challenge is. The ADHD brain is really driven by competition. So creating challenges, competing against each other is something that likely drew you to the legal profession to begin with. Is it can be very competitive. It's a very competitive industry to even get into and be successful at. So we want to harness that in your day-to-day tasks that you struggle with motivation for. So ways that you could turn your work into a game. I'm like a really big proponent. We're actually, I think I mentioned we're moving to Florida. So I've already taken down a lot of my little things because we're preparing for our move. But I have like little, like literal like behavior boards where you check how many times you've completed something and then positively reinforce yourself with a reward at the end. So let's say if I build 10 hours, I have no idea if this applies, but if I build out 10 hours per day through my week and I accomplish that 5 times that week, then I get, I don't know, a pair of shoes. So something like that, you want to build it into a game, and you want to specifically do this with the things that you don't want to do, that you put off doing. So finding ways to gamify it, even competing with coworkers or finding ways to compete. Like we end up doing, I mean, so my kids are also likely ADHD. And so we turn everything into a game. Everything is a competition. Who can get their jammies on the fastest? Who can get up the stairs the fastest? You can turn anything into a game. And having kids, I think, puts you at an advantage of finding ways to gamify anything. So what's something that you can gamify this week? Whether you're timing yourself or racing or giving yourself a celebration at the end of tracking. And then I'm going to read some of our last ones that I missed. I work from home and must have my window open so I can stare at my orange tree and all of the activity around it. Oh, I love that. Squirrels, birds, hummingbirds, lizards, etc. Absolutely. Nature, and again, remember that nature is one of our mind fundamentals. So being outdoors is also going to improve your dopamine levels while also creating novelty for you. So it's a double whammy. And we can go ahead and forward our slide. Thank you. Timing myself, try to beat the clock and finish the task before the alarm goes off. Again, yes, these are things that the world has already created for you. So all you're doing is gamifying it for yourself. And so gamifying and urgency kind of go hand in hand, which is exactly that, creating a timer and challenging yourself to accomplish it before that time. So things like timers, body doubling, which is essentially just having somebody else in the room. It's not real urgency, but it's perceived urgency. We know that having somebody else in the room, especially because ADHDers are likely experienced a lot of criticism growing up because they were doing things wrong or doing things in a different way than other kids were, they tend to be more sensitive to criticism and try to avoid that criticism, and also have really negative self-talk. Just throwing that out there. But so when somebody is watching them do a task, they're going to stay on task a lot better because they likely have this internalized childhood fear of always being perceived as being off task. So having somebody else in the room, even if it's a friend or a family member or somebody you love who's not judging you, I promise will always keep you on task better. So creating healthy pressure without burnout. I also love like setting a timer because then it applies to Parkinson's law, which essentially says that no matter how much time you give yourself, a task is going to take that amount of time. So if you give yourself 2 weeks to accomplish something, you're going to take 2 weeks to accomplish something. If you give yourself only an hour to accomplish that exact same thing, you're going to accomplish it in an hour. and that also brings something else into play that I think is really crucial for the ADHD brain is letting some work be B-level work. I don't have a tool or a name for that, but as high performers, we want everything to be A-plus, top-notch, the best that we've ever done. And that's why we end up perfecting and going so deeply into something that shouldn't take that much time. But if you allow about 30% of your work to be B or below work, you're going to accomplish a lot more and you're going to need less motivation to accomplish it. So I'm just throwing that one out there for free, if that makes sense to you guys. We've got in here competing with a clock, trying to complete a project without interrupting myself with another project that seems urgent. Yes. So using the clock to make sure that this is my time block for only this task, this hour, or this 20-minute increment, whatever it is a really great way to use urgency. Once I started experiencing time blindness during breaks, I began setting screen time limitations on my phone, as I do for my kids. The visual reminder and lockdown of whatever I was spending time on triggers me to go back to work. Yes, 100%. I've also even heard... This one's kind of crazy, but I mean, it works is like, if you notice that you've got to go to the bathroom and then you have like 10 minutes to do a task that you really don't want to do, and you don't allow yourself to go to the bathroom until you complete that task. Like there's all kinds of ways that I hear that people use urgency to their advantage. All right, next slide. And then finally, purpose. We talked about this a little bit earlier, that you guys are likely very driven by purpose and passion anyways. You don't get into law, which is very, very difficult to get into the industry, to pass tests, to go through the entire legal program, and then become a lawyer without being so driven by the passion and purpose behind you. So it may be really easy to apply your passion and your purpose to your depositions, or I don't even know what a deposition is, but somebody said deposition to me the other day and I was like, I'm going to use that. But it's probably easier for you to apply your passion and purpose to the things that feel exciting and passion driven, when billing and the more boring things are just as purpose driven. You don't get paid if you're not billing. Like there's got to be some passion behind making sure that you're sustaining your lifestyle and your family and getting a paycheck and keeping your job. So making sure that you are able to apply purpose and passion to anything you're doing is going to help you to be better motivated in even some of the boring tasks. So let me know in the comments, what are some of the passions that drive you guys to accomplish your daily tasks? Depositions are questioning parties and witnesses under oath. Thank you. So somebody said preparing depositions. He was very good at preparing depositions. All right. Oh, hi, Jennifer. She was in my training last week. Okay. So everybody has in cup. interest, novelty, challenge, urgency, and purpose. Let's go ahead to our next slide. So some quick task activation hacks for some low dopamine moments for you. The first one, the 5-minute rule. So just do 5 minutes. So just like we were saying, urgency is going to drive you. And Parkinson's law says that you can accomplish anything in the amount of time that you allot. The 5-minute rule is, I really don't want to do this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to set a timer for 5 minutes, and I give myself permission to only accomplish 5 minutes worth of this task. And what likely happens almost all the time is that you will end up going longer because you're going to start finding that motivation. You're already releasing that anticipation dopamine to accomplish the task. So allow yourself the 5-minute rule. I heard it. Somebody just shared, I heard something great. You commit to donate to a candidate that you are against if you don't do blank. That is a great tool that I've also heard. So most of us are not, in fact, motivated by positive reinforcement, but we're motivated by negative reinforcement. And so when you tell yourself that if I don't accomplish this or if I don't do this, then I'm going to, like she said, or he said, donate to something that I completely disagree with, then that's usually the negative motivation that we need. I don't love that because then we're also kind of like leaning into that constant, like driving negative reinforcement, and that can lead to burnout very quickly. You'll also lose your novelty really quickly after you make those first couple of donations. And I've tried that hack for the record. After you make those first couple of donations, you're like, well, I'm not giving them any more money and I'm not getting any better at that task. So I need to figure something else out. But everybody's different. So everybody try all of these. Okay. Body doubling is something that I recommended earlier. You can also do virtual co-working. So literally just say to a coworker, hey, will you just let's go sit at this table together. We can work on completely different tasks, but having other people there is crucial. If you work from home, body doubling is something that you're really going to want to utilize when you can. And maybe you do that through your novelty of going somewhere else to work. Task pairing, so which we talked about, doing an email with your music. Every time you do your billing, you have a very specific T. I'll tell you that before marrying my amazing husband, I did date a lawyer, and he would have a specific bourbon every time he had to do his billing. I don't know if that's allowed. I mean, I don't know. I mean, if it's not, I'll tell you his name because I didn't like him. No, I'm kidding. So anyways, he would always pull a specific bourbon to do his billing to kind of motivate him. But again, remember that alcohol is dopamine depleting. So that is kind of counterintuitive. You want to find a ritual that is boosting your dopamine and feels good long-term and sustainably. Habit stacking. So attach a task to an already existing habit. So if every time you... every time you take a lunch break, you go for a 5-minute walk afterwards, or every time you go to the bathroom, you have to bill 5 hours, or, I really don't know how all that works, but just finding a task that you're doing regularly and predictably. So if you have like a morning meeting every morning with your team, then as soon as you finish that meeting, you have to answer 20 emails or clear your email inbox, et cetera. Excuse me. And then make it visual. So if you see it, you're going to accomplish it. And so that's why I really like task boards that are also helping you to gamify it. I also really like to-do lists. That's a very ADHD thing, but it genuinely, especially the checking off, that is dopamine releasing, people. Checking off your to-do list is going to help you to release some dopamine. All right, let's go to our next task. Oh, trying to get petitions granted without getting case continued for a stupid mistake. My modification on that is to run an extra amount of time if I don't stay on task. Oh, I like that. Yes, no kidding. There's got to be a negative reinforcement that's less dangerous than donating to a party you don't like. Agreed. Real life scenario, apply the tool. So you put off writing. So I'm going to ask you, you guys answer here. So to make sure that we're integrating this work, all right? So you've been putting off writing a 12-page brief. Which income elements would you use? And remember, there's no right or wrong answer because each of you are unique individuals who are driven and motivated completely differently than one another. So what income elements would you use and how would you apply it? Now that you know income. Outline for 5 minutes. There you go. Just apply the 5 minute rule. And once you've got it outlined, then think of the urgency if you keep avoiding. All right. But we started with outlining for 5 minutes. So then we applied our older skills, which is fine. And well, urgency is also an income rule. All right, for timing purposes, I'm going to let you guys off the hook for this interaction. Let's go ahead to the next slide. We'll pass that and go to the next one. All right, so just to wrap up, your ADHD brain is not broken. It's simply interest driven, and there's a lot of great strengths and tools that you have that the neurotypical brain doesn't have. The key to managing your ADHD brain is to lean more into it and understand how it operates differently and how to hack it, as opposed to all of the time management and organization skills that are typically taught by neurotypicals and just don't work for you. Dopamine is what is driving your motivation, and you have a lower baseline of dopamine to begin with. Urgency is a short-term fix. It's not the most effective system. Tools like income and habits that will boost your dopamine on a regular basis are going to make a sustainable difference in your ability to stay motivated. And you can succeed without burnout by designing your workflow with your unique brain in mind. Oh, we had another really great answer. I tend to get overwhelmed if I look at that kind of task as one monolithic obligation. So I try to break it down into manageable component parts, beginning with an outline. All right, both of you outlined. And then a very good example of kind of reverse engineering. So setting the intention of small bite-sized pieces. And then I would recommend literally putting it on your calendar. So if you've broken your outline down into a week's worth of work to accomplish 1 hour per day, then you can schedule on your calendar. I'm going to hit this bullet on my outline on Monday, this bullet on Tuesday, etc. All right. So I appreciate all of you guys for attending today. I do have a more in-depth training all about ADHD. And this training is specifically for people who are kind of like beginners at navigating ADHD holistically. So whether you think that you have ADHD or whether you have been diagnosed with ADHD and you don't necessarily want to use medication and you want to better understand how to use your ADHD to your advantage, then I have fine-tuned your focus and navigate symptoms of ADHD. And I'm giving it to you guys today for just $24. Jennifer, I saw you in there. Perfect. Thank you. And then the next one here, I have another discount for you. I do work one-on-one with clients, specifically high performers and high achievers. So I work with lawyers, a lot of like nurse practitioners, other therapists, a lot of people in the financial industry. And so not only specifically for ADHD, but just understanding mental health as an asset to your industry and your business. But I certainly can work specifically with overcoming any ADHD problems that you are having. And so I work in 6 month bunches or containers, and I'm giving you guys an exclusive discount for attending today also. And you can scan this little QR code. The first step is booking a call with me, and it's really just kind of like a vibe check. I want to make sure that I enjoy you as a person if I'm going to spend the next 6 months with you, and make sure that you like me too. And then also make sure that what you're looking to achieve is something that I feel confident that we can work together towards accomplishing. Can we put the previous barcode back up, please? Thank you. And then I will go ahead and open it up for any questions if you guys have any questions. I wasn't able to take any questions last time because I went so far over my time. But if you have any questions for me about anything ADHD, specifically motivations, or understanding dopamine, I am happy to answer them. Just drop them in the chat. It's not scanning. Let me see. Oh, I can, I'll give them the link to
Well,
include in your packet.
if yeah, so if they go in the packet, it might scan better there than trying to do it on a screen.
Okay. And I can give the actual link too. So you'll get a packet with all of these slides. All right. Do we have any other questions? It sounds like you may be knowledgeable about this. How do you feel about pairing one's target behavior improvements like NCUP with taking supplements? I know of one that has vitamin B6, L-tyrosine, mucuna extract, green tea extract, and quercetin. Yes, so I 100% am a proponent of supplements. That's something that I go into in the training. So I will say L-tyrosine for sure, vitamin B6, yes. Green tea, then you're relying on caffeine. So it's not completely necessary, but yes, I definitely recommend supplements to manage the different neurochemistry that's happening in the ADHD brain. What information is out there regarding use of cannabis to address anxiety and comorbidities with EFD slash ADHD? I can't think of what EFD is. There is a lot of contrasting research about marijuana right now, and specifically with anxiety. I personally don't use it. I think for me personally, it makes me far more anxious, and everybody's different. So I don't do a lot of the research regarding it. I found in my experience with almost all of the clients that I have that do use cannabis to manage their anxiety, it becomes more problematic in the long run than helpful. Oh, and also remember that it is still dopamine releasing. There are other plant-based medicines, I think, that I are better suited to improving mental health in general. Oh, executive function deficit. All right, I didn't know that was an actual diagnosis, but interesting. Is it necessary to get it? Oh, very, that's my favorite question. Is it necessary to get an ADHD diagnosis? I have self-diagnosed myself based on these webinars I've been attending. The only reason that I would say that you need to have a diagnosis is when you want to try medication, or if you need any sort of accommodation for your ADHD. So once you have the diagnosis, then you can have any accommodations. I think of like licensing, testing, or I don't know when else you would need it necessarily. I can't imagine that. It would apply in many other places in the workplace. But if you're considering that you have ADHD and maybe you also have a child who now has 40% more chance of having ADHD, then those accommodations can be helpful to them. But for most adults, if you're not interested in taking medication, I don't necessarily think that the diagnosis is necessary. Once, and it's also kind of hit or miss. If you're already established in your career, then having background checks that include your mental or your medical information don't necessarily work against you. But it can work against you in life insurance. So it's a something to consider. But I don't think that it's necessary as long as you're getting as much information about yourself as possible. All right. Thank you. I hope that that was helpful. You guys have been great, and I will see you next time.